No standing room. House lights down. Gradual decrease. Pitch black. For a few seconds, unintelligible voices behind the heavy velvet rises slowly. Unobstructed view. Bare interior. This is the prompt, but you can call me Voice One. I speak in italics. Not a sound.
Sitting in front of the stained mirror.
She is sitting. This one seems eager to participate.
Standing with murder in mind.
Now she is standing. The next one proceeds, slightly annoyed by the interruption.
She looks at herself, lights a cigarette.
Some emphasis on disappointed.
Disappointed. She lets her half-naked body collapse on the bed and lies motionless, left for dead.
Lying, cutting her off at considerable speed.
Feeling washed, she covers herself with the torn dressing gown and runs to the table. Holding her breath in anticipation, she lifts the receiver, draws back, and listens. Silence.
Is she standing, or sitting, or lying? Puzzled.
The phone isn't ringing.
Insisting.
The ringing persists.
Frustrated.
There is no phone.
There is no telephone. No ringing. No stained mirror. No cigar briskly rets.
Her feet start to feel sore inside the petite and elegant black high-heeled shoes.
No lighter or matches. Fire hazard. No smoking on stage at any time. No bed. There is a pair of black high-heeled shoes, size 5 at least, behind the red curtain. One of them is in clear view of the audience. No chair. Becoming agitated, speaks quickly, no commas, no breaths.
She gently runs her fingertips over the elaborate wood carvings on the back of the burgundy velvet armchair. A few seconds elapse as she moves towards the wardrobe to choose from the dress's shiny, small and perfectly round sequins.
The red velvet curtain is laid on stage and hangs from the fly floor. Well, there really is no fly floor, but let's call it that. She is once again interrupted by the eager one, this time with a threatening tone.
She pricks her finger on the long elastic snake dress. They can cut through your skin, you know. They form a curled up circle and surround her as a masquerade seductively unravels, and she arranges the folds on the red velvet dress.
The theatre is small but spacious. Vehemently.
I will not have it. This is my story. I will tell it as it pleases me.
A corridor runs behind the screen at the back of the stage.
Well, being the narrator does not necessarily provide you with all the answers.
Brief tableau. Theatre lights are placed throughout. They don't work. One keeps getting hints of what is going to happen with the story.
The characters take the stage and assume their roles. Execute them. Execution is key.
Do not walk across unless the curtains are drawn. Quietly.
It is. It is the key to this story.
Centre stage. A table facing front, towards the audience. On the table are one lady's purse, brown leather. Brown fabric with a flower pattern. Not sure what it is for. A plastic bag containing assorted buttons. A4 notes for audience. Paper patterns folded up neatly. One pair of man's shoes with shoelaces, black. One Polaroid. There is one spotlight on a stand with wheels that can be moved around the space. No fly floor. This is the end of Act 1. Neon lights are placed above the stage. The spotlight is used to light the seats. Thought is a thread. Act 2. These voices are taking turns speaking.
How do we tell this story? Why do you get to go first?
A storyteller, we.
The story must unfold with adequate suspense and irony. A pair of black high-heeled shoes.
Dismissive.
About shoes.
A red dress. A paper pattern. A lady's handbag. Polaroids. White tape. Black cloth. A table. And a long red velvet curtain.
A love affair.
Excited.
That ends in tragedy.
Anxious.
What are you trying to say?
Storytellers called the written page cloth. Mysterious.
Things aren't always clear.
The voices end up speaking at each other and over each other. Resuming.
I am ready to begin again.
They have different stories.
Why can't you dwell in obscurity, in darkness?
Impatient.
A gust of wind suddenly blows from the half-opened window, scattering the powder on the dressing table over the perfume bottles, the lighter, the ashtray, and the cigarettes.
The props are described in order of appearance.
A murder mystery!
They are placed on the table, ignoring the sudden interruption.
A small coffee table clumsily balances on three legs, holding an empty bottle of some cheap red wine, a lipstick-stained fine crystal glass and an old-fashioned black telephone.
Adamantly.
There is no telephone. Oh, I'm losing my patience. What is being disclosed here?
There is no empty bottle. There is no lipstick. There is no crystal glass. And there is no telephone. The table has four black metal legs and is covered with black cloth. White tape is put on black cloth to separate and identify all the different props. Frustrated.
I want to tell you what I saw.
Irritated.
Again with your demands.
Sighs.
Are there any witnesses?
Two small spots light the stage, and a third one is placed over the seats. Keep neon lights on. We need 7 A4 size white sheets of paper. The letter type is bold, in capitals. The notes say, 1. No smoking on stage at any time. 2. There may be a show on stage. Please do not slam this door. 3. Theatre technical balcony. No unauthorised access. 4. Remember you can be heard in the auditorium. Please keep sound to a minimum. Thanks. 5. No visitors backstage during performance. 6. No public admittance beyond this point. 7. There may be a show on stage. Please be quiet in this area. Thank you. Short intermission. Please note that in the event of a fire, or in case of an emergency, there are two fire exits located to the right and to the left of the stage.
If you discover a fire...
Never use the word fire within the hearing of the public. Always use the code word...
Miss Scarlet.
Mr. Brown.
Mr. Sands. If competent or trained in the use of firefighting equipment...
Attack the fire with appliances provided.
...without taking personal risks. If unsuccessful in seconds, please proceed with the evacuation.
On hearing or seeing the alarm of fire...
...person in charge will be familiarised with escape routes.
Be aware that the signal to evacuate the building is a continuous bell tone.
Evacuation procedure.
Person in charge is responsible for the evacuation of public areas.
Staff manning exits should open any draft curtains and exit doors, and in a firm voice repeat, this way out, please.
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 Evacuation completed.
Close all exit doors.
Search all cloakrooms and toilets.
Do not stop to collect personal belongings.
Do not re-enter the building.
Remember the code word.
Act 4. Let us return to fabrication, to texture, and to the surface of the weaving being hastily scribbled on the sheet. With relish.
The fantasy unfolds under a veil of darkness.
This process, however untrained the fabricator may be, can never be hasty.
Oh no, not again. I've heard it all before. Besides, no one believes you and no one is listening. How do you expect me to fix that?
Annoyed.
We cannot dwell on it for too long. Focus on the plot.
Care is built into the structure itself. You cannot hurry it along. Oh, mutter, there is no plot.
There is no plot.
Louder, we need characters.
Very well, we need characters.
With rising exultation.
Yes, and a feebly lit room, populated by flowers, in a profusion of colours and smells.
Here we go again. You must cut her off immediately.
No, no, stop.
Calmly, warming to your point.
They share the building but inhabit different spaces, just like the servants in the master's house.
The chairs must remain in their seats. The fabricator demands it. You're bewildered. I'm not sure.
About these characters. You're so unclear. What are you trying to say?
The theatre itself demands it.
Rules were meant to be broken.
You're not sure about what's going to happen either, are you?
Why do you think clarity helps you at all?
The enforcement comes from within.
The characters have only just begun to appear, and you're already plotting their deaths.
The plot is thickening.
We can take them on a dangerous journey.
Trespassers will be punished. Do not cross the line.
We can make them trespass.
No unauthorised access.
Would it be enough? How would they know?
I've put up notes, to enforce this. The very structure of the building demands it. You're addressing me.
Oh, that's enough. I'm sick of you telling me what to say and to do. Who the hell are you, anyway?
I put words in people's mouths. You're frightened.
I'm not frightened.
I enjoy inducing the climax. You're not convinced.
So it was you all along?
Yes. Bringing conflicts to the boil. You're sneering at me.
Words can only do so much.
Do you agree?
Yes, words can play. They can fabricate textures, landscapes. They can even spin yarns. But they cannot be taken seriously.
Cut her short.
They cannot bleed. They cannot smell. They have no smell.
You're getting carried away.
They cannot force a damp, cold, perfumed stench across the nose and mouth.
Piercing.
They cannot kill.
Ungrateful. My voice gives life to you. It shatters the illusions that you summon.
We forced you open.
Pretentious.
We were not gentle.
Remorseful.
I'm not sorry.
Petulant. You walk all over me, but I'm bigger than you.
May we please have some light on the matter?
Yes. Can you tell us?
The end.
How does it end?
Loose ends. A late...
afternoon.
Evening.
Eyes watch with eager anticipation.
As the story unfolds...
never suspecting they may be next.
A slight, cool breeze makes the...
blood stains.
Curtains stir.
The costumes populate the stage.
This situation is still confusing.
She takes the glass to her lips and...
what?
Change the ending.
Is yours any better?
The chairs are seduced.
The dress.
They enter the auditorium.
Covered in sequins at the bust, lovely puffed up sleeves, a long red trail.
They huddle and listen.
The dress strangles the actress.
Why does she keep dying?
Across the stage with intent.
It jumps towards the seats.
They cannot be moved.
Quiet moments are used to make serious statements.
Cushioned and comfortable.
Secrets reveal themselves.
At least 100.
Desperately crying for my attention.
Cannot be entirely eliminated.
Can be accommodated.
No one ever listens.
Fast pace throughout.
Lots of running around.
Creating pictures.
Chaos.
Doing.
Undoing.
We begin to get a sense of the plot.
Oh, it's too late.
Dead still. Please be quiet. descends from flies, starts down. There may have been a show on stage. No fly floor. Fully down. Faintly lit. Blazing. House lights. Curtain. A play about was written by Sara Santos and Yolan Bogdan. The prompt was played by Claire Cunningham, voice 2, Abby Weaver, and voice 3, Kat Bethina. The play was directed by Sara Santos.
It's a very nice night tonight, sitting down with Frog Morris.
Cheers.
Cheers. Who, along with Sara Santos, has compiled tonight's programme. You just heard a play about by Sara. My name is Robin Kirsten. I, along with the rest of tonight's programme, all graduating from Goldsmiths College tonight as we speak. We wish you could be there, but you're obviously not. We'll continue with what is described as a post-apocalyptic sci-fi drama set in the 21st century. For radio, by Frog Morris, called Antifreeze.
For many people, the dawning of the new millennium brought uncertain times. Once mighty governments, whose empires once ruled this world, began to fail. And just as we learned we could not trust totalitarian regimes of the right and of the left, we also learned we could no longer place our trust in democracy. But a new order was already rising. It began, unassumingly enough, in the East End of London. Amongst the little grocery shops and market stalls, nobody would have believed that this is how it would all end. How long have I been here now? I do not know. I push my face into the collar of my jacket to try to keep off the cold. This is not the cold of the wind. Oh, if only it were. How I long for the breeze of a winter's wind. This is the cold of the enormous cooling units that surround me on all sides. Row. After row, what seems like miles. I remember back to my university days. I would have associated white walls with the art galleries. I studied art once, believe it or not. But now, white walls make me think only of refrigerators. Study what lay before me in the immense cooling cabinets. I call them the nameless dead. This is how they make the horror digestible on a daily basis, by removing the names and the faces. I remember, as a child, my mother would take me to the butcher's shop in the town. I remember seeing the animal carcasses arrive, pigs from the nearby farm, sliced into two halves right down the centre from snout to anus and slung up by the trotters from meat hooks. I remember the little piggy faces. Is it barbaric of me to want to look into these plastic wrap packages and want to see a face? Even half a face? I despise this place, but I must come here if I want to get food. I try to grow my own vegetables. My main crop is cress. It grows by the light of the refrigerator in my flat. I close my eyes for a moment. I try to focus. I find it hard to look for any length of time. The fluorescent lights, reflecting from countless acerbic white surfaces, brings on nausea and pains in my eyes and in my head. I try to remember back to before all this happened. I try to remember a song my father used to sing. In Dublin's fair city, where the girls are so pretty, I first met my darling, dear Molly Malone. She wrote a little ballad whose streets were on
Thank you again, Frog. And next up is Marilyn Michelle Kunkel with her piece, Spooning the Herd. Love the herd, spoon with me.
I came to the cattle ranch, not having ever worked with cattle before. My father's a mule skinner, so I know stock. I know mules. I'd ridden. I knew how to break an animal. I knew how to ride a bucking bronco. But we had never dealt with cows. And it had been a good decade since I'd ridden a horse or a mule. We come to the cattle farm and half the role of herdsmen. We're responsible for moving the cattle. What we chose to do was start to understand the nature of the cows, understand the nature of this herd, the land, things about us, and worked in a way that I call spooning the herd. We'd cut through the cattle with no dramatic gestures, no overt fear chasing down, jarring, thrusting dynamics. We would gently move them. If one cow went astray, we'd just let it go. It'll come back. Spooning the herd. This farm had a river that cut through it called the Nehalem. She laughed and gurgled and rolled through in the summer anywhere from ankle to knee deep. But in the winter, she was three stories high, running through like a freight train. Enough to drown you. You just stood there and hoped she didn't take in your house. She did that a few times. On some spots. The other side of the farm was backed by a major thoroughfare of traffic with the main highway. So we had the arterial of the river and we had the arterial of the highway. One was on one side of the farmhouse and one was on the other side. Spooning the herd was, for us, a way of dealing with cattle that was conscientious instead of fear chasing. Zoe would manage the issues of fence, opening them up, clearing, but spooning the herd was tending to the details and gently moving the cows, suggesting direction, suggesting where we needed to go. It was an easy dynamic between us. Chasing them down with fear always left some darting out in all directions, and you'd have to go out and re-herd them. You have to regather them. Half the herd's cross, half the herd's over. They're confused. They don't like it being separated. Spooning the herd is paying attention. I took my family to a cattle farm to become herdsmen. We did this work for nearly a decade. It was an enormous herd. It was a rather small herd. And they were used to different herdsmen. So they were used to working the herdsmen as much as we were working or attempting to work them. What we chose to do was start to notice the nature of the herd. And as we would cut through the herd, now mind you, we're on foot, we would cut through the herd and move the herd of cattle with gentle directional movements. We would not go through startling, and we would not go through jarring. Spooning the herd. Spooning the herd is a type of give and go. It's a type of awareness, the dynamic that's going on, the relationship that's ecologically bound. We all are part of the landscape. Spooning the herd as cattlemen would be working together as a team, paying attention to each other, how the herd is impacting each herdsman, where there needs to be support, where there needs to be adjustments. Spooning the herd. Team spooning. Spooning the herd is readdressing, is considering how we approach one another, how we choose to invest in the relationship, herds to herdsmen, to land. If I am considering relating to the cows in such a manner, I start to listen, watch, and learn from the cows as though there might be something to discover in the place and time from the cow.
Thank you, Marilyn. I'm sitting tonight, actually, with Frog Morris, and we had Goldsmiths, and we're drinking dry white wine. And we'd like to say thank you for listening. And to continue is the first of two works by Ron Leppard called Art School.
It was not a misunderstanding, I can say. It was more the two different ideas clashed together in a bit like a car crash, in a way, I would say. And there was no way to understand the other position.
But I was thinking like I was swimming in a very wild sea without being able to go anywhere. Just try to avoid the waves. But I couldn't go forward or backwards.
Now that it's a time ago, I'm sitting here in front of the photographs, and yeah, we had so different opinions about the whole idea. In the beginning, everything was clear, but after a while, yeah, maybe after a while, our egos appeared. Yeah, why? I ask myself now.
I worked during the midday and the day. When I was leaving at night, she would would photograph the work and then implies her work afterwards.
After that, I began to erase everything again.
Erasion doesn't mean that the disappearance is absolute.
After the first days, the space was nearly clean in the next morning.
Next morning, I had a surprise, which wasn't always positive, and that's how things were going up to the last evening, where we decided that we had to make decisions. But in the next morning, when I came in, there was a lot of things that they were different, which made things more chaotic. And I went quite impulsive and I asked my colleague to take out some things, and she wouldn't accept that. So I said, I said then that you don't like my work, and you don't, we had an agreement, yes. So we became involved in a difficult emotionally moment, both of us, where ideas were pushing each other to take decisions.
Yeah, something was lost, of course, and this was maybe quite painful.
I consider this project as a failure, but like Beckett said, try again, fail better.
In that moment, I really understood that, yeah, if she really fights for something, there was no possibility for me to erase this, because I knew exactly that she really wanted to keep that, and there was no possibility for me to go over it.
Appropriately enough, thank you. Ron Leppard with Art School. Next up, What's the Edge? By Alex Steiger and Darren Kalau. This piece is a remix of a tutorial Alex had with Andy Harper.
You call this a stage?
It is a stage.
What's the narrative? What's the edge? What's the narrative? What's the edge? What's the narrative? What's the edge?
Marshmallow. Marshmallow.
Marshmallow.
Marshmallow.
Marshmallow.
Marshmallow.
Recipe for madness.
Banana. Banana. Banana.
Recipe for madness.
The narrative.
Marshmallow.
Banana. Banana.
And getting straight on with the rest of tonight's program, we're halfway through. We have the first of a series of recordings done by Frog Morris. This was done at Frogstock, a festival he organized recently, earlier this year, at Alma Enterprises. This work is by Frog Morris and is called Postcard Camera.
I like to consider myself an international artist with a global perspective on things. And this evening we've got my friend Fred here, who's doing some videoing for Shit TV. And I was very kindly invited by Fred over to Scandinavia last summer to do a performance over there, which I greatly enjoyed. And I wrote this next poem while I was over there. We're having a lovely time. I wish you were here. The weather's great. It's just a shame about the beer. Imported Danish lager that tastes like fart. Do they not understand that brewing is the finest art? The Swedes, they call this stuff people's beer. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Do they not understand that some people have a sophisticated palate? And I'd be the last one to spread race hate. But one race of people seem to be to blame. Every can says Carlsberg, I blame the Danes. Every other country has a brewer who can do their job. But every time I buy from Carlsberg, I feel like I've been robbed. In every restaurant and supermarket across this planet, they sell this piss water and it's time to ban it. I don't know how the Danes dare call this stuff beer. They must be punished. They must learn fear. I'm having a lovely time. I wish you were here. The weather's great. It's just a shame about the beer.
Following that is Diddy Lynn with Confessions.
I was watching a medical drama with my younger brother and sister. The patient was a woman suffering from cancer, and her sister was crying uncontrollably. The scene was overacted terribly, so my brother and I were laughing. My sister became angry at us and said, "This isn't funny, cancer isn't funny." I was annoyed she was chastising us, so to enrage her further, I said, "Yeah, cancer isn't funny, it's hilarious." Just at that moment, my dad's secretary walked in and heard me exclaiming this. Her sister had recently died of cancer, and she just looked at me and asked, "Have you seen your father?" I was mortified.
I am a media relations manager for the Lord Mayor, City of London. And the Lord Mayor, City of London, is a very important person. He travels around the world promoting financial services for the UK. And so I've had this job for 3 years, and my first foreign trip with him, we were going to Moscow, Ukraine and Georgia. And this trip to Moscow was my first ever trip abroad. We were having a major reception at a wonderful 19th century palace, really wonderful. And it was the home of the Busier ambassador to Moscow. He's a really, really talented man, and he spoke Russian perfectly. We were at this reception room, which was full of gold chandeliers, huge doors, and pleasure, really. And as a junior official, it's my job to kind of fit in, help the Lord Mayor. But at this party, for someone like me, that's fairly straightforward. So we meet a lot of important people, and we were chatting to a number of guests. I am quite junior, to be honest. That means sometimes at the beginning of the meeting, I have to talk to some of the women. And I've always thought, really, that important men should talk to important men. As I was chatting away anyway, I'm a very friendly person, even though I appear to be quite confident. I was chatting to some people I thought were officials like myself. And we were chatting quite openly, quite openly. And now perhaps, I think, too openly. We talked to three or four of them. I talked to three or four of them. And I was left with a lady. She was perhaps in her 50s. Very elegant, very charming lady. We talked intimately. She was interested in me. I was chatting to her. So I said quite naturally, "So sorry, what do you do here?" And she said, "I'm the lady ambassador." So all this place was hers. I just felt completely foolish. She was very relaxed about it. But I felt very small, very embarrassed. I kind of avoided her for 3 days.
Basically, my father and my late mother were very different people from each other. Actually, the opposite. You know, my father is a religious Jew, and my mother is nearly atheist. My father is very rational, sustained, and My mother is a very emotional person, spontaneous and not that stable, and it happens once or twice that when he has guests over, those guests are more like him. My mother would be in a bad mood, or, you know, I don't even know how to say it. She would say the most amazing things in public. Sometimes the person next to her wouldn't even know her, or it would be the first time they'd ever come to our house. And, for example, she would get mad at my dad, and she would swear at him in public, and I wasn't that disturbed by the abuse she gave him. But what embarrasses me the most is that I knew these people. You know, I might not know them personally, but I know their work, I know their background, and they're religious Jews. And every time when things like this happen, I remember the silence right after she said something. It was completely silent. Sometimes somebody would say something just to fill up the empty space, and the conversation would go on as though it had never happened. And in those moments, I felt really embarrassed.
The other day, I lost a fake leg of the old World War II veteran I was taking care of. You know, I brought it home to try to fix the straps that attach to the part of the leg which is left. You know, it come loose from too much old man activity, like playing cards and shuffleboard. So I brought it home and finally fixed the straps. But at some point, I'd misplaced the leg somewhere in my house. So I proceeded to look all over my house, you know, in the basement, in my room, in my sister's room. And the last place I needed to check was my parents' room. So I slowly opened the door to find my mum having sex with my guitar teacher, Charles. I was so embarrassed and just completely freaked out, you know. I guess at least, you know, I found the leg in the boot of my sister's car.
Oh, well, 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 I knew I was in for a real good time when I saw Leggy Peggy at the Guggenheim standing there by a big gym time. Well, I thought one day this could all be mine. Well, I've got a girl and she's called Valerie, works in a bookshop, hasn't got a gallery. I like her and I like her family, but she doesn't earn much, though they call it a salary. Well, I knew Valerie would have to go when I saw Leggy Peggy down in old Bilbo. And I knew our love would grow and grow, especially if she'd give me a show. It wasn't her. No one told me. She'd been dead 28 years. Didn't even look like her.
You just heard Frogstock's recording of Victor Mount singing Leggy Peggy. We get back straight into Frogstock. We're staying with Frogstock. This is a piece by The Man from the Woods called Burrow.
Okay, hi. I'm The Man from the Woods. And I live in some woods somewhere. And I write songs about living in the woods somewhere. This first one, it's called Burrow. You've been living your life in a small place. Living your life in a small place, you really like it there. Days pass, You stare out at the green grass. You like to stare at green grass. You think that's okay. Cause we are living our lives in a burrow. Living our lives in a burrow. We really like it there. We are living our lives in a burrow. Living our lives in a big cloud. Don't really know if that's wrong. 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 We are living our lives in a burrow. Living our lives in a burrow. Cause we really like it there. I wanna live my life in a burrow. Live my life in a burrow. I think that's okay. Yeah, I wanna live my life in a burrow. Live my life in a burrow. Cause I really like it. Okay, thanks.
Next up is Ron Leppard, who has produced Casual Mechanisms, which he has won awards for.
Hello? Hello?
Can I speak with Mr. Winter or Mrs. Winter?
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not here.
So can you take the decision on his behalf? It's regarding Roadman.
Maybe you want to talk to them when they're here. Who is this, please?
No. Not a problem. I can do one thing. I'll call back, right?
Okay. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Bulldog Broadband.
I see. And where are you located physically?
Well, this is an outbound call center which is situated in New Delhi, India.
You're calling from New Delhi?
Yes.
Ah, that's amazing. I quite like your country.
Okay, so have you ever been in India?
Yes, I've been to India quite a few times, actually. Mere liye aapka desh bahut acha hai, lekin abhi hamare Hindi acha nahi hai kyunki...
Okay, so you can speak Hindi.
Not so much anymore, but I could.
Okay, so you are Christian. You are a Britisher.
I'm not British. I'm a guest here. I'm Israeli.
Okay, right. That's really good. You can speak Hindi a little bit.
Can I ask you something?
Yes.
Oh, how is the weather in New Delhi now?
So I'll do one thing, I'll call back in 5 hours, right?
Okay.
And it's really lovely talking to you.
Thank you very much. What is your name?
My name is Sarah.
Sarah?
Yeah.
Is this your Indian name?
Yeah, this is my name. Yeah. What's your name?
My name? Ron. So you're Christian?
No, I'm not Christian. I'm Indian. I'm a Muslim girl.
Uh-huh.
Right, Sarah is also a Muslim name. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. It's very nice of you to stay tuned, listening to us. You just heard again Ron Leppard with Casual Mechanism. This one, again, is from Frog Morris's Frogstock, which was at Alma Enterprises. And this is a piece by Lee Clark.
This is about living on an A road. Let's live on the A road, lady. A big kid and an obese baby. Let's live on the A road, lady, now. Tesco's home base and B&Q. Argos and Dixon's and McDonald's too. We don't have to walk, we can just drive through. With IKEA shelves for us to screw. Let's live on the A road, lady. A cute kid and an obese baby. Let's live on the A road, lady. No.
And the last two pieces are, appropriately enough, about private views. Tonight is our private view at Goldsmiths for everybody on the MA program in visual arts. And this one, appropriately, is titled How to Talk to a Famous Artist.
How to Talk to a Famous Artist. Instructions and Life Experiences by Alex Steger. Breathe. This may sound easy, but really, remember it. Because my policy is no regret. Don't pick your fingers, don't talk about yourself, don't fart, make a casual comment. Always have your business card on you and accessible. Present it with confidence. Try not to have fuzz or gum attached to it as you scrounge for it in your most likely gigantic bag. Now, if you had an opening, do not get drunk and proceed to tell your life story. Do not point out who you think is hot in the room. Look the person, the famous artist, directly in the eyes. Do not look all around. And if you're one of those people that gets nervous and starts to laugh, don't. Substitute by biting your lip gently. You have three options, the way I see it, all resulting in three different outcomes. Number one, make an impression. Number two, make no impression. Number three, make a bad impression. You may be wondering what constitutes a bad impression. Saying something stupid that is of course remembered. Or being drunk and stupid. That's even worse. Now let's recap here. Be yourself, stay calm, compliment them, and be confident. So, somehow, the whole reason why I'm telling you this is because somehow my life experiences, I end up next to famous people. For example, one time I was standing next to Rosalie Goldberg. She approached me after the screening of a Laurie Simmons film premiere at the Frieze in London. I was so nervous I couldn't talk. The irony was all that happened was her books flashed in front of me and all the productions she has put on flashed in front of me. She looked at me. She tried to talk to me. She was standing next to me. She walked across the room to talk to me. Anyway, I couldn't even talk. What was I supposed to say? Hi, you're my hero? Just kind of stood there. Then, all I could utter was, say hi to Issa for me. That's all I said. And she said, what is your name? I said, Alex. She said, how do you know Issa? I said, I used to work with her at White Box. I didn't even say I'm an artist, or I go to Goldsmiths, or like, wow, nice job on the production of this film. Well, that quickly ended. She kind of turned her back and started talking to some art historian. And I stormed down Oxford Street, trying to unwind, as it flashed in front of my head at least 1,000 times that day, and has continued to haunt me. Shit, where does all your confidence go sometimes? Or better yet, basic communicational skill. So the point of these lessons is relax, be prepared for anything, and practice. That's all I got to say.
About time, you were mine. I've been waiting for much, much too long. You've been sad, life's been bad, and I know precisely what's wrong. Now that he's not your squeeze, you won't have to go with him again to schmooze at those dues, cause I'm not as exciting as most other men. All those famous entertainers, they aren't what life's worth living for. Won't be doing private viewings, no more guest lists for you anymore. No more glamour, no more clamour, the lane that you've lived in's too fast. You won't have to go to one more after show, the excitement's over at last. When we met, the jet set wanted to have you aboard. I was shy, I couldn't fly, I was afraid that I might make you bored. But I persevered, I grew a beard, I've shaved off now, thus enhancing my manly allure. I spoke to you, and then I knew the hardships you'd had to endure. No more skiing, gallerying, no more last minute weekends in Rome. Movie premieres, who needs them? There's enough fun to be had back at home. No more previews, no more free booze, those cocktails are all in the past. You know that your heart isn't in fancy parties, the excitement's over at last. No, I can't sing, won't go dancing, and I don't have a place in New York. Don't drive Porsches, don't race horses, I'd rather just stay home and tour. Can't spend much on dates, and I'm not best mate with half of the Hollyoaks cast. Let's you and me both spend the weekend in Hove, the excitement's over at last. Certainly is now.
And that was Martin White with Private View. Thank you very much. Thank you for staying tuned. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you got something out of it. I don't know. I hope you come to the show. It continues till Monday, the 16th at Goldsmiths. We're glad you listened.
Cheers.
Cheers.